You know, you can only imagine what Oakland is going through right now to get this type of news dropped on them when obviously they've had that team move back and forth between Oakland and LA over the last few decades.
Yeah, and obviously they lost them once before to Los Angeles. Now they're losing them again. And it really comes down back to the same thing. They can't figure out a way to get a new building there with the city of Oakland. The Athletics are having similar issues trying to get a new building for themselves. And unfortunately, you know, that's the world we live in now in terms of, you know, these teams. In order to be competitive, you need more modern buildings. And the Coliseum, one of the stadiums I've never been in, so I can't speak to it. We'll be in it for the first time this year. I'm told to be prepared. It's going to be an interesting experience. So I can't really speak to what it's like, but I was told it's similar to what Candlestick used to be before the 49ers moved into Levi's Stadium. And look, I mean, just to give you an idea from my perspective with what I work with, the booth is probably, I don't know, 8 feet, 10 square feet by, you know, 10 feet by 10 feet booth. It's really small. And literally, for all of our equipment, we had one working power outlet.
Jeez.
In Candlestick Park. And I'm told Oakland's worse. So that's why they need a new building. Just from a
media perspective, yeah.
Standpoint, if you think about it, I mean, the Oakland Coliseum has been there for, you know, 40, 50 years, right? I mean, that building's got to be built from the 60s or 70s, right?
Yeah.
I would imagine, Oakland Alameda. So, you know, think about it. They've gone from black and white TV to color TV, now to HD TV, not to mention all the infrastructure required for broadcast, for broadband, and all that sort of stuff. And it's just, it's hard to continue to retrofit old buildings to make room for a lot of the new stuff you need.
Well, and also, you know, like you alluded to, it's the only stadium where you have a baseball team and a football team sharing it. So, I mean, the wear and tear.
I guess that's the last one, huh?
Yes, the wear and tear in terms of changing the fields and the surface and so forth. And obviously, as you mentioned, I mean, it's been up for a number of decades, so the technology is somewhat outdated. And, I mean, not to poke fun at the place, but they've had well-documented plumbing issues over the course of time where they've had situations, yes, that has not ended too well
no.
And has caused delays in games and cancellations and so forth.
Not to mention a little messy.
Yes, a little messy.
Messy.
Just a tad. Just a tad. Yeah.
So, look, I think that's kind of where we stand with the NFL. Anything else happened this morning while I was sequestered in the doctor's office?
Well,
I might have missed something. I don't know. I wasn't on my phone.
Well, there is some news related to the NFC East 2 Nuggets.
Oh, what
the
we got?
The Eagles signed Chris Long, who spent last season with the Patriots, so they're adding a veteran pass rusher.
Defensive lineman?
And the Cowboys gave Jason Witten a 4-year contract extension.
4 years?
Yes.
Huh?
Yeah.
Well, he had a pretty big salary cap hit this year, and that's probably, I would imagine, to
part
spread
of the rationale.
That out.
Yeah. And now, remember, Gavin Escobar is a free agent.
Yeah,
some of their backup tight ends and so forth. Not that that's necessarily going to warrant the reason to give Jason Witten a 4-year extension, but 34 years old, very durable, still playing at a high level. I'm not necessarily surprised that he wants to continue playing football. So those are the
34,
two of these signings. 34.
34?
Yeah, third-round pick back in 2003.
I mean, you can't imagine he's a tight end playing until he's 38, right? How long did Tony Gonzalez play? What was his last year? How old was he?
That's a good question. Could look that up.
Because he's one of the guys that played longest, I would
and
think,
And he
right?
probably could have played for another season
yeah,
or two.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And I think, you know, Tony Gonzalez is probably a better athlete than Jason Witten in terms of raw physical skills, so maybe Witten could hold on a little bit longer.
So he played from 97 to 2013, so he is 41 now.
He's
he retired 4 years ago.
He's 37.
37. So,
yeah.
I mean, Witten could play another
And Antonio
season.
Gates is probably around 35 now, right? 35, 36?
He's, I think, right in the same draft class as Jason Witten.
Was
if
he?
Memory serves me correct.
I bet you he's about
I think
the same
they're,
age.
I think they're head-to-head in terms of the draft class. Let's check that out. Antonio Gates was drafted in 2003. He was undrafted, excuse me.
Oh, so he's
so he was the same
right.
class, though, as mm-hmm. Jason Witten.
And the Cowboys actually have someone, and, you know, everyone throws around the Antonio Gates comparison now. You know, former basketball player, convert to football. Dallas has a guy that they drafted in the seventh round last year, I think Rico Gathers, I think, or something like that, who
yeah.
was a basketball player. I think only played like one season of college football, and he's, you know, one of these, you know, athletes they're trying to turn into a tight end,
which is common, I think, for most NFL teams.
Yeah,
it's not
yeah,
necessarily
absolutely.
A surprise. I mean,
no.
there's always talk about how if LeBron James played football, he could be able to convert to a tight end given his
yeah.
structure
I
and
think
so forth.
Wide receiver, to be honest with
well,
you.
Well,
I could see him being Brandon Marshall. That's the compare that I think of for LeBron. It'll be Brandon Marshall. Or like an A.J. Green or something
well,
like that.
Well, certainly a red zone threat. I
oh,
mean, there's
okay.
no doubt
you
about
think?
That. Yeah, Rico Gathers was a sixth-round yeah. pick in 16
sixth
out
round,
of Baylor.
Sorry. So
yeah.
Anyway, so
6'6".
Of course, we'll talk anything Giants football. No word, no movement on the Jonathan Hankins front. He's still a free agent. We can talk about that. And anything else you want to talk about, I remember, folks, if you want to watch the rest of the show, the first part's on Twitter, but you can go to the Giants mobile app or Giants.com to check out the rest of the show there. And again, at 12:30, we will be joined by former NFL and Ohio State running back Beanie Wells to talk about some of the prospects from Ohio State coming out in the NFL draft. Thanks for joining us again. Giants mobile app or Giants.com to watch the remainder of the show.
And we will be talking about the Ohio State College prospects with Beanie Wells, as well as perhaps maybe reminiscing a little bit about the National Football League. So that'll be coming up. We'll get to your phone calls. One other thing that I wanted to mention before we get to the calls, yeah. Brandon Marshall addressed the owners yesterday at the owners' meetings. Usually one player every year talks about stuff that's not necessarily related to the X's and O's, but stuff that is related to what they can do to help the players out. He actually got a lot of compliments from the owners. Jed York, the San Francisco 49ers CEO, actually tweeted out, and I'll read you an exact quote, "Easily the best speech I've heard at an NFL meeting. Thank you, Brandon Marshall." And he was talking about
mental health stuff.
Well, a little bit about that, but it was actually about My Cause, My Cleats, which is what was implemented for NFL players to wear their own cleats that specialize to promote their own causes and so forth. And Brandon Marshall was campaigning to allow them to have a little bit more flexibility in future seasons to be a little bit versatile and obviously help raise money. So that was one of the things he brought up. And then he also talked about, you know, things that they can do to help celebrations and let the players showcase their personalities as well too, which is not necessarily a surprise. But, I mean, that was something that was big that a lot of the players were campaigning for last season, to enable them not just 1 week, but to allow them to have the flexibility to wear whatever cleats they want as opposed to the ones that are under NFL rules and regulations.
Yeah, I understand having, you know, a little bit more freedom with the cleats specifically. The other stuff I get, you want the colors to be uniform to the team, but I could see some more freedom with the cleats. I have no problem with that. And from a celebration perspective, it's hard. I actually like fun and creative celebrations. I enjoy them. I laugh. Now, it's not why I watch the game, and not having them wouldn't make me, you know, consider not watching football. I think that's silly. It's just not that important. But, you know, creative fun stuff, some of the stuff Chad Johnson used to do, used to be funny when he picked the pylon up and tried to putt the ball, you know, putt the football like he was Tiger Woods.
To the cheerleader.
Yeah, exactly. Like, little innocent stuff like that to me is funny because you're not rumming it into the other team. It's not Terrell Owens running to midfield at the star, and, you know, then Emmitt Smith did it, then George Teague, and you almost got into a fight. You know, Chad Johnson proposing to the cheerleader, I don't think is going to make the other team mad at you. You know what I mean? But I think the problem you run into, Lance, and I think this is where the owners kind of have to figure this sort of thing out, and the rules committee, and it's really hard because it's all judgment. They're trying to right now to have a hard, fast set of rules. You can't go to the ground. You know, you can't have a group celebration. All those things. And it's a hard set of rules, and it does limit creativity a lot. But if you take those rules away, then you get into the point of officials having to determine what's appropriate and what's not, what's obscene and what isn't, what's fun and what's unsportsmanlike. And I think, especially in the heat of the battle on the field like that, that's a very difficult distinction to make. And that's why I think they have the hard and fast rules. It's the same reason why they have the hard and fast rules with what's a catch and what's not a catch, because you want to take as much of that judgment out of the equation as possible. But I think it's a fine line they walk with that sort of stuff. And I don't think that's going to be an easy thing for them to figure out.
No, well, I mean, it's an interpretive art, as you mentioned. I mean, you can write all the rules you want. It's still human beings interpreting what's written in the rule book. I mean, I think what people need to understand, I mean, this is fans and the league, sports is entertainment. And I don't think that's ever going to change. And the reason why we watch sports and we're passionate about it is because we want to have fun and we want to see the personalities of athletes. So I personally have no problem with players celebrating. I don't know where you draw the line. I think it's very difficult from an interpretive standpoint, but I do think that if players want to celebrate after a touchdown, since it's a part of the emotion of the game, I don't see why that should necessarily be an issue. But, you know, clearly they're trying to, you know, make it so that it doesn't necessarily take away from the contest, and sometimes that's difficult because in the heat of the battle, when you score a touchdown from a player's perspective, you're not necessarily recalling what the rule book says. I mean, you're thinking about the moment of the game. So I think it's difficult for players to turn the switch on and off under those circumstances. All right, let's open up the phone lines. And as we mentioned, we'll hear
overseas.
From Beanie Wells. Yes, a little bit later on. We will head overseas. We got Jay in England to start things off on Tuesday's edition of BBKL. What's happening, Jay?
What's going on, guys?
Hey, Jay. Doing well, pal. Thanks for calling in.
All right, so I got two questions, one for John and one for Lance.
Yes,
so for John, and I'll take it off the air. I don't want to take up too much time. For John, what's the status for Will Beatty, and where do you see him fitting along this O-line next year?
Well, Will Beatty's a free agent right now. He's not on the roster, so as of right now, he's not going to fit on the offensive line.
But, oh, okay.
And quite frankly, look, here's the thing. They gave Will Beatty plenty of opportunities to earn his way into playing time last year during the weekend in practice. He was never able to do it. So I would, despite what Charlie in Portland, Maine might say, I would not count on Will Beatty being a significant contributor in any way in the offensive line next year. What's your second question?
Second question is, John Mara said they wanted to add another running back somewhere along the lines. Now, whether that's in the draft or him talking about Adrian Peterson, we don't know. There's issues with running backs like Joe Mixon and Dalvin Cook with off-the-field issues. If those guys are sitting there in the third round, fourth round, is it worth it for the Giants to pick them up with their off-the-field issues? And I'll take it off the line.
Thanks. Appreciate the call,
Jay. Thanks so much for weighing in. I mean, listen, it depends on, you know, the research that the Giants do and, you know, whether they think it's worth the risk. I mean, we bring up these players every single season, even the ones who have injury risk, too. It's the same thing. You have to evaluate the pros and the cons for players. I mean, I think that it's been well documented. The Giants certainly have an old school philosophy when it comes to evaluating players. And, you know, they're going to look at whether or not those players could represent the organization well. And they're going to take that into consideration. However, you know, I think it's also important to point out that, you know, the Giants have given players who have some questionable backgrounds multiple chances to right the ship and have an opportunity to thrive. For example, I mean, Will Hill is a player that comes to mind.
Yeah, Ahmad Bradshaw is another one.
There you go. So, I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that maybe they would take a chance on a player that has some baggage because, you know, they have brought in some guys. Late rounders, though, as you mentioned with Ahmad Bradshaw, Will Hill was undrafted. But you have to always weigh the pros and the cons, and whether or not that player is bringing something to the table that you can't get elsewhere, whether it be through free agency or as an undrafted player.
Yeah, Mario Manning even had some off-the-field stuff when he got picked in the third round, so that was a higher pick. So, yeah, I mean, look, I don't think it's out of the question, and like Lance said, that's, you know, we could talk about guys on the field. We don't have the ability or access to do the type of off-the-field work on these guys that the front office does, so that's something that they'll judge. They'll have a conversation. Not just with the personnel. That's going to be an ownership conversation, too, when it comes to, you know, representing the organization. That's going to be everybody from top to bottom involved in those decisions, and, you know, they'll figure out what's best.
Absolutely. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Ty is in Maryland. Ty, what's happening?
Hello. Hey, what's going on, guys?
Feedback. Ty, get off speakerphone, bro. You got to get off speakerphone.
All right, Ty, you know what? We'll put you on hold, and we'll try to see if the technology can cooperate, having some technical
that
issues
was some
there.
Feedback there.
Yeah, let's instead head to Mike in Pennsylvania. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Big fan of the show. You guys are getting me through the offseason.
Thanks, Mike. You guys get us through the offseason.
listen, wanted to talk draft real quick and highlight one player after that.
Sure.
What do you guys feel about cornerback out of USC, Adoree Jackson? Has experience playing both outside and in the slot, and he's a return guy.
Honestly,
first round pick.
Honestly, I don't know much about him. I don't remember seeing him, obviously, being mocked as a first-round caliber guy. I'll do some work on him. I'll let you know. But I'll be honest with you, I'm really not that familiar with him off the top of my head.
Okay. I mean, I'm a big fan of improving the special teams game at this point. I feel all we have left to do is patchwork from here on out.
Right.
Second, I want to highlight one player who's not on anyone's radar. It's a day three pick, Brandon Bell, linebacker out of Penn State. But good experience playing coverage, and he can rush the passer. But, again, he's off the radar. And last, I just wanted to know your thoughts. Why haven't we re-signed Leon Hall yet?
Well, I think the question is, does Leon Hall want to continue to play football? I think that's the better question to ask.
Okay. I didn't hear anything about him. I just know the dude's a playmaker whenever he's on the field.
Well, I mean, he certainly was a valuable signing. There's no doubt about that. But remember, he played the majority of his career with the Bengals, and then he was debating whether or not to re-sign with Cincy or join the Giants. He chose to join the Giants in the latter part of training camp, and then it's up to him whether or not he wants to continue his career. I mean, I think retirement may be part of the conversation for Leon Hall. He has not signed with anybody, so, you know, that remains up in the air. But as far as why the Giants haven't signed him, I think the question is at this point, I mean, does Leon Hall want to continue to play football? And he could always be one of those veterans, and we see this happen a lot. Training camp starts, and these guys, you know, they don't want to go through spring practices, and they wait, and then they rejoin teams or they sign elsewhere. So, I mean, the fact that he hasn't officially announced his retirement, still very possible he continues to play football. But, I mean, I haven't heard anything about whether or not he wants to continue his career.
Gotcha. All right. Appreciate you clearing that up.
No problem. And on Jackson, I just did a look at a couple, you know, places that I trust the information on. Smaller guy, about 5'10", 180. Slot guy. But and the one quote that was off NFL.com where, you know, people in the industry love ball skills and special teams ability. He's a good returner, as you mentioned. No argument there. Paul Hornung, award nominee for special teams. And also a lot of interceptions, gets his hand on the ball, but a little small. So they project him as more of a slot corner at the pro level.
Well, the last caller brought up about the fact that he wanted to see the team improve on special teams. But, you know, keep in mind, you're not going to necessarily just bring in a player who specializes in special teams. They're going to have to bring something else to the table. And, you know, let's not forget, if you look at what the Giants have done so far in free agency, I think to a certain degree they actually have addressed special teams, because one player in particular, and we talked about this last week when the signing was made official, was Valentino Blake. Antoine Blake, formerly known as, who was with the Steelers and the Titans. I mean, he is a guy that has contributed a lot on special teams over the course of his career, and he could be in line to be the fourth corner. That's somebody that's going to probably make a significant impact on special teams. And, you know, even some of the linebackers that they brought in last year, whether it be through the draft, B.J. Goodson, you know, he's somebody that could continue to chip in there. I think that they have players that can certainly make an impact on special teams. I wouldn't say that they're
pretty good.
Yeah, I think actually they made dramatic improvement in that category. Yeah. So, I mean, when you look at, you know, how they want to shore up the roster, I don't know necessarily if I'm saying to myself, you know, that's priority number one, that, you know, they need to bring in players that specialize in special teams.
Lance, let's try to squeeze in a couple more calls before we get to Beanie Wells, who'll be joining us at 12:30 talking about the Ohio State prospects.
We got Charlie in Portland, Maine.
Hi, Charlie.
Hey, guys. Hey, John. Hey, Lance.
How are you, John?
Hey, are you up for a part in Star Wars as one of the Borg?
That's quite a
thing you've got on your hands.
First of all, you got to get your information straight. The Borg is Star Trek, not Star Wars. Come on now.
Oh, did I say Star Wars? I meant
yes.
Star Trek.
There you go. No, and yeah. I am not.
Hey, the thing is, you better ask JPP for his club, because you might need that next.
Well, I can tell you, I know I'm in good hands, because a lot of the same people that worked on JPP, I think, have a hand in trying to make me well again. So that makes me very confident. I hope in about 2 years that means I'm going to get a nice hefty contract from somebody.
Yes.
Hey, all you need is Annika, John. You don't need that contraption. But anyway.
Well, yeah. You should stick to your commentary about Annika, because clearly you don't know the difference between Star Trek and Star Wars. I'll tell you that. So much for you being well-rounded.
Hey, there could have been Borg in Star Wars. You don't know.
Yeah, that's fair.
Coming up. Could be coming up. Hey, yesterday I tried to get through the line. I couldn't. And, man,
that's a good thing,
I just couldn't believe the commentary yesterday.
On?
I mean, just Myra saying what he said. But there was one thing he said at the end. He just said, there's a place for flowers on this team somewhere. Well, that's fine. But it hasn't, please, not at left tackle. Please, not at left tackle. And the thing is, like, we haven't brought in any competition for him yet. That's my main issue. And you were saying, well, Will Beattie's gone and blah, 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 and he couldn't do this and he couldn't do that. Well, last year, you got to remember, he had no training camp. He couldn't train because of his shoulder. He came in really late. So he's got a whole year of working out, of playing six games or seven games that he played. Now he can train this whole off season. He can have OTAs, he can have summer camp, he can have preseason games. I would bring him in if they will allow him to compete for the left tackle position. So we've got to bring in some competition. Clady's out there. Ryan Clady's still available. Andre
he's never
Smith,
healthy.
I know he's
Andre
a right
Smith
tackle.
Went back to the Bengals. He's not out there.
And he's also a right tackle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that. Did he sign with the Bengals?
Yeah, he rejoined the Bengals after spending last season with the Vikings.
Well, he's out of there. But there's still some
gotta
players
update
that
list,
we could
Charlie.
Bring in.
Got to update that list. That's a bad job. Boy, this is a rough phone call for you. Annika, Star Wars, Star Trek, you know, naming free agents that are not in the market anymore. Keep spinning,
Charlie. They come and go so quick. JR sleeps, you know, sleeping, and they're already gone. So.
Oh, come on.
Charlie, here's the thing to understand. Nobody's on the football field right now. No OTAs, no nothing. They could still bring in a veteran in the spring after the draft, which is, I still think, a possibility.
Or sometime the next 3 weeks before the players report.
I mean, you bring in a guy now, you keep throwing out Ryan Clady. Ryan Clady's still out there. If he's out there another 2 or 3 weeks, I mean, that's still a name.
Charlie, I'll say this too, and I've had people tweet me about Ryan Clady. The dude can't stay healthy. I mean, he just can't stay healthy.
Struggled in Denver to stay healthy.
And then when he struggled to stay healthy last year with the Jets. So, yeah. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, whether it's, you know, knees or whatever the case might be, he can't stay on the field, and that's a problem in the league. You can't win a job in the tub, you know?
Well, I understand that, but you can't – I mean, how – I just don't understand why this organization has so much faith in Flowers. To me, it's like a total disrespect to Eli when Eli is 36 years old and he needs to have somebody on his blind side that can actually – he can have confidence in and protect him.
Sure.
I just don't understand why they don't just say, okay, he's our right tackle – he's going to play right tackle. We need to find a left tackle to protect Eli's
Charlie, we had this conversation yesterday. So what left tackle at the price that they signed for did you want them to bring in over the offseason? Who did you want?
They should have brought in somebody last year.
Well, that's not the question I'm asking you. Of the guys available this offseason at left tackle, who did you want them to bring in?
Anybody. Beecham. Anybody.
Oh,
I
dude.
Don't care.
First of all, I hate to tell you, Beecham was ranked as a worse left tackle than Eric Flowers
because
last year.
Because he was coming off an ACL, and you know it takes at least a year off the ACL to start playing to your normal.
Yeah, but Charlie, would you rather go in? But Charlie, here's the thing. Why do you have more faith in Beecham to improve as a left tackle who's older, been in the league longer, than a guy like Flowers who's younger? Plus, you'd have to pay Beecham $7-8 million more per year than you're paying Eric Flowers. Why would you do that?
Beecham got a 3-year deal
for
$24 million.
About Flowers.
$8 million a year.
You know, one thing that, you know, Myers said was he's in the gym and he's working out and he's lifting weights. The problem with Flowers is not his strength. The problem is his technique. He can't learn technique. That is his issue.
No one's going
to
argue that.
He wasn't able to learn it in college. He hasn't learned it in 2 years. At being a pro, why do you guys think or anyone thinks he's going to all of a sudden learn it this year? I don't get that.
Well,
and if you don't have competition for him, you're never going to push this guy.
Well, I think that with respect to the technique point that you brought up, Charlie, you know, and I said this yesterday, I think the third year is an important year for any player. And the other thing to keep in mind is the fact that this is the second offensive line coach that he's had in 2 years in the NFL. So keep that in mind. I think that, you know, with Mike Solari getting another year with him, you know, let's see what that does. You know, like I said, the third year to me is a huge year to determine the development of a player. And Charlie, we've got to let you go because we have a guest on the line.
Yep.
And we'll certainly get more to the offensive line topic as we move along.
Hey, let me just say one last thing.
Real quick, yeah.
He should ask Robert Redford to see if he knows if there's any left tackle whisperers, because that's what he needs to improve his technique. Thanks, guys.
Charlie, I tell you, your material gets worse and worse by the minute here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. It's just amazing. You know, he really stretches
call.
Out the pop culture references here.
It was a rough call for
yes.
him.
Yes. Well, let's try to recover nicely.
Oh, yeah.
With a former NFL running back who now joins us, played a few seasons for the Arizona Cardinals, is now on the radio, co-host of Tim and Beanie on 97.1 The Fan in Ohio, and he's here to talk about the Ohio State prospects coming up in the NFL draft, and that is none other than Beanie Wells. Beanie, Lance Meadow, John Schmoke with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Things are great. Things are really well. You know, right now, just tackle Ohio State spring ball. You know, as we speak, I'm just living from over that area. Things are great. I'm enjoying it.
Excellent, man. Welcome to the media world. It is a whole different world. Hope you're having fun with it. And luckily, you got a lot of good stuff happening with Ohio State and plenty of guys trying to make that jump to the next level, something you're certainly familiar with. You thought, who better to have on to talk about that journey than you? Let's start on the defensive side of the ball, Beanie, because obviously a lot of great defenders coming out of Ohio State this year. And the guy I want to start with is Marshon Lattimore. A lot of people think he's the best corner in the draft, but big red flag is hamstring injuries, and obviously for a corner, you worry about that. He was healthy this year really for the first time, though he had a little thing at the combine, some debate as to what the injury actually was. How concerned do you think NFL teams are going to be about those quote-unquote chronic hamstring issues?
You know, obviously, anytime you have a team drafting somewhere in the top 10, you're expecting to go out and get a guy that's going to be able to come in and produce right away. And if it's a guy that has nagging injuries, those are going to be concerns. Marshawn Lattimore is a phenomenal athlete, big, rangy corner, can run. And I think in this day and age, in the National Football League, you know, the league and its owners and GMs, they are drooling, you know, for big, tall corners that can go against these, you know, big-time wide receivers in the league with it being a passing league. And Marshawn is one of those guys. But, you know, he does have the injury concern there with the hamstring. Will it be a big issue to drop him outside of that top 10? I don't believe so. I think when you look at the upside with him and how he matches up, how he runs, and how he did at the combine and at pro day, I think that solidified his position as being one of the top-tier corners in this draft. You know, obviously, it's always a gamble when you're drafting players. I don't know a GM or coach that you'll talk to that say there is an exact science to it, and they have this checklist that they can go through to hit on guys and make sure they're going to be surefire. So that risk is always going to be there. But, I mean, I think he's a phenomenal athlete, phenomenal player. And I think one of the things to really think about when you talk about Marshawn is you got to look at where he came from. He came from Glenville High School in Cleveland, which was a football factory. He goes to Ohio State, which is another football factory. And we know how Kerry Combs has been able to cultivate the defensive backs that have come through Ohio State over the years. And those guys have turned out to be pretty good pros.
What do they ask him to do? Is he mostly playing press man? Same thing for Gary and Conley, because obviously they'll be asked to do the same type of thing. Are they more suited, you think, as press man corners, or are they going to be off-coverage guys on the next level?
You know, I think those guys can do both. I think we watched them excel at the press man type situations. And I think that's what the league wants this day and age. I mean, you got a lot of different systems, but when you got guys that can do both and that can really excel in a man-on-man situation where you're going against a Julio Jones or an Antonio Brown, and you can kind of get hands on those guys and disrupt them at the line of scrimmage, I mean, that's all the better. So I think those guys can definitely do both. Gerrion Conley is another bigger guy, comes from a football factory in Massillon, Ohio, and obviously coming to Ohio State. So those guys have the pedigree. And I think that's very important when you're evaluating and you're drafting guys in the first round, making sure they have, one, the wherewithal, the smarts, and the love for the game. And I think these two individuals certainly have that with where they came from.
It's interesting, BD. The Giants drafted Eli Apple last year in the first round out of Ohio State, and Conley ultimately filled in for Apple this past season, and Lattimore, limited experience. I'm curious, from watching Lattimore and Conley, how do they compare to what you saw out of Apple's development?
You know, I loved Apple coming out. Obviously, he, you know, burst on the scene his last year, and I think he surprised a lot of people when he was drafted 10th overall to the Giants. You know, I think when you compare the few guys, obviously they're bigger corners. They all can cover. But I think the thing that separates Marshawn and Gerrion is they're a little bit more physical. Now, I think at the next level, I think Eli has certainly learned to be a more physical corner. But, you know, at the college ranks, I think those guys are much more physical in terms of, you know, getting the hands on receivers and jamming them at the line of scrimmage and being able to, you know, kind of have that bump and run type coverage where, you know, they only call with the penalty, thank God, but, you know, they're very smart in the way that they go about it.
You mentioned the physicality at the line of scrimmage. How about in defending the run? Where does Lattimore and Conley rank in terms of their consistency in aiding in run support?
Yeah, that's what you want out of the corners. I mean, you don't want just a guy that's going to be able to, you know, sit back in coverage and do a great job of that. You want guys that are not afraid to come up and run. One of the things that Urban Meyer does with his guys, with all of his defenders and pretty much all of his skilled guys, and I think you'll notice it if you pay attention to Ohio State, he puts those guys on special teams. He sends them down earlier on in their careers, down covering kickoffs. And smart. What that does with a lot of guys, it instills a tougher mentality, opposed to a guy that just is a position specific guy and that's not going out and playing special teams. So Marshawn and Gerrion both have that mentality that they're not afraid to go down and do the dirty work and hit somebody. And I think it's shown. We've watched games and those guys coming up inside the box and not afraid to, you know, tackle the bigger running backs.
We're joined by Beanie Wells. And Beanie, it's funny. Every time I look at Ohio State prospects the last couple of years, the one note I see on all the descriptions is inexperienced. And it's because there are so many good players on that roster that these guys, you know, can't get on the field as freshmen. They usually have to wait a year. And then they're so talented, like Malik Hooker, they get on the field as a redshirt sophomore. All of a sudden, people are like, holy cow, this guy's awesome. So when you watch Malik Hooker this year, how much did you see him learn from week one to the end of the season as he got more and more experience? And how much better did he become as the season went along as that safety?
I think one of the first things you noticed with Malik Hooker was his ball skills. The ball's in the air. He's tracking it. He's going and getting it. I mean, and there was a situation in the earlier part of the season where I seen him run from one side of the field and be able to track it and just pluck the ball from the receiver's hands. And it was an incredible play, one of the best plays I've seen from a safety, especially a younger safety that really hadn't had that opportunity to be back there playing consistently enough like it was this past year. His development has been tremendous. I mean, he's a smart guy. And obviously, when you got those smart players back there in the secondary, it makes it a whole lot easier for them to transition and be able to read quarterbacks and read through certain offenses and understand the quarterback's progression. I think he definitely understands that, and he's an athlete. I mean, he was a kid that came out of high school playing basketball, and that's what he wanted to do, number one. And fortunately enough, he was able to get on the football field, and we were able to see that athletic ability just be able to take over. But, you know, the thing about him down the stretch that I've seen is just him being more comfortable back there. And I think I know the middle linebacker has always talked about as being the quarterback of the defense, but him being that strong safety, that big play guy back there, he certainly was.
Beanie, you mentioned that he was a basketball standout, Malik Hooker, and he actually had an opportunity, I believe, to play Division I basketball because he was that talented. As a former athlete, how much do you think his skill set as a basketball player, his instincts, have translated to the football field, and maybe that better serves him at the next level as well?
Oh, man, it's huge. Anytime you can get a guy that's a basketball player, one, you know you're going to have great feet. Basketball players have tremendous feet. And the change of direction that you see with Malik Hooker, maybe on a basketball course, absolutely translated to what he does in the secondary. Like I talked about the play before, him able to just read the quarterback's eyes and just to turn on a dime and run all the way across the field and snag the ball from a defender. He catches it at his highest point, and that's something that's very important for a young defensive back in this league, is being able to track the ball and being able to, you know, decipher where a quarterback is going to go and not get lost with the quarterback eyes. Because I know a lot of times that happens with the younger defensive backs in this league, and Malik is a very, very smart individual. That's the one consistent with the defenders from Ohio State, is they're going to be well-coached and they're going to be smart. If you don't know the defense, you don't know the ins and outs, you're not going to be on the field for Urban Meyer. And that's something that I really applaud him for doing, is making it sure his guys know exactly every single detail of the defense and the ins and outs.
Yeah, and Beanie, I think the other thing, too, what NFL teams are looking for, you're looking for a smart player, and they're always looking for safeties that can not only come into the box and, you know, be that strong safety guy that's going to help in run support. They really need that single high guy that if they want to run cover three, you can put him in the middle of the field and he can track sideline to sideline. Those guys don't grow on trees. Like you mentioned, you need instincts. You need to be an athlete. Can Malik Hooker be that single high safety that the NFL craves, that can be that Earl Thomas and really help that defense prevent those big plays down the field and make plays on the ball?
There's no question about it. You know, Earl Thomas, the Eric Berrys of the world, I mean, his ball skills remind me of Ed Reed, the way he is able to track the balls in the air. I mean, it's so many great comparisons. And the crazy thing about it when we talk about Malik is that he's so young, so he has so much more room for improvement with his skill set. And I think that's so incredible, and that's so important for teams to look at when you're looking at and evaluating him, is looking at his upside. And, you know, teams all the time, they draft guys on potential alone. But when you have the potential to go along with the production, that makes your eyes just perk up like a deer in headlights. I mean, he's that much of a high prospect for the league, and I know teams are really going to be after him because of the inexperience, but he has the production to match, and you can teach him so much about this game, so much more than he already knows.
Talking with former NFL running back Beanie Wells, co-host of Tim and Beanie on 97.1, The Fan in Ohio. In terms of the other players on defense, linebacker position, Raekwon McMillan, There's talk about whether or not he would be a middle linebacker, Beanie, a strong side linebacker in a 4-3 defense. Where do you see him fitting in that style of defense? And how is he in terms of stopping the run versus maybe being a coverage type of guy?
You know, in terms of stopping the run, he's very physical. And I think that's one of his strongest attributes, is that he's able to take on, you know, the offensive linemen and share those guys and get around them and still be able to make the play on the ball. And that's what you want. More importantly, he's a smart kid. And I keep going back to that because I know the coaching job that Urban Meyer and Luke Fickell was able to do with the defenders and the guys on that side of the ball. As far as him being able to cover, now I think that may be a little bit of cause for concern for him. I think at the combine and that pro day, he showed that he had the speed to be able to do so, but maybe the change of direction, the shifting of the hips, may be a little bit difficult for him at the next level. But if I'm a guy, I'm definitely going to look at him and consider him as a middle linebacker because I know how stout he is against the run and being able to run sideline to sideline, tight end to tight end, like I say, and be, you know, read and react as you want a linebacker to do. I think he'll fit in just fine at the middle linebacker position. And because of, I don't know how athletic he is, and in terms of being able to cover guys, I think his best spot would be in the middle.
I want to jump to the offensive side of the ball, Beanie. Curtis Samuel, he's interesting. He's someone that the Ohio State kind of used as Mr. Everything. Go runs a 4-3-1 at the combine in the 40. I mean, holy cow. Where do you see him fitting in the NFL? What's going to be the adjustment for him, you know, trying to find his spot in the league? And how quickly do you think he can get used to whatever role he gets assigned?
No, it's going to be hard. I mean, he's a phenomenal playmaker. So good. I mean, he's a guy like Percy Harvin. And you know the issues that the league had with Percy Harvin. They couldn't figure out how to use him on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
And I think when we see these athletes like the Percy Harvins, like the Curtis Samuels, it's all a matter of how do you utilize him. Is he going to go with the creative enough offensive coordinator to be able to utilize him at the running back spot and use him at the receiver position? He's a phenomenal playmaker. I mean, you see when he gets the ball in his hands, what he's able to do. And the thing that you have to think about here at Ohio State, he was vastly underutilized. I mean, we don't pass the ball a lot at Ohio State. So, I mean, the kid had, what, nearly 800 yards receiving in a non-really passing attack. And he was the number one passing weapon that we used. So, I mean, his biggest adjustment is going to be to find a solidified position. And I think the biggest thing it's going to be for the league and the team that drafted him is figuring out a way to utilize him consistently. That's why I believe he's going to have to go to a very, very young, innovative offense, somebody with a creative mind, and that's going to be thinking outside the box in terms to be able to utilize him. You got a player that good, you have to figure out ways to get him on the field and get him incorporated early and often, because those guys are few and far between and are such dynamic playmakers that you want to have them in your foxhole.
Beanie, I've seen comparisons to Samuel with respect to Jalen Marshall, who signed with the Jets and went undrafted. Are those fair comparisons based on how Marshall was utilized at Ohio State the previous year?
Yeah, absolutely fair comparisons. I mean, both of those guys are really athletic and can do a lot of different things. Marshall was a quarterback in high school, so for him to be able to come in to Ohio State and be able to switch around and age back in the receiver position was a little bit of a change for him. But, I mean, he's a natural athlete, so it was great. But I think Curtis is a much superior athlete in terms of running in between the tackles and getting those hard yards. He's not a big guy, but he's able to do that. And we've seen guys like Darren Sproles be able to, you know, still churn out yards in between the tackles with the smaller stature. And another component that he has is the special teams aspect. I mean, he's a great returner. Yeah. But the comparisons to Jalen are accurate, but I think he's a much superior athlete in terms of his physicality.
And you mentioned big corners. Team also want big wide receivers. Noah Brown, 6'2", bigger guy, 222 pounds. You mentioned Ohio State doesn't really utilize their wide receivers a ton. They don't throw it much. What would an NFL team get in Noah Brown if they decide to pick him?
So just think about this for a second. So last season, not the 2016 season, the 2015 season.
Yeah.
So the slated guy to be the number one wide receiver on Ohio State's offense was Noah Brown. And that's talking about being over a guy like Michael Thomas, who just went out and shredded and just killed it down in New Orleans this year in the National Football League. So that's saying a lot.
That is.
For a guy to come out and to be the number one go-to target, I think Noah Brown is going to do a phenomenal job at the next level. Hopefully he gets with the right team that's able to utilize him. And that's something that hurts Ohio State and their wide receivers. We have great talent. And once those guys get in the game, those guys' ability is shown and they're able to take over. But we're not able to utilize them enough because of the playmakers that we have and us being a predominantly run football team. I think Noah Brown, I mean, we watched the catch. I think the catch was seen by everybody in the Oklahoma game and the way he was able to dominate the red zone. I mean, he can do so many great things. It's going to be getting him in the right system, getting him with a quarterback that's going to, you know, pass the football, and I think he can be a great steal for a team, probably somewhere in the middle rounds.
It's funny, I was going to bring up, Beanie, the Oklahoma game because four of his five catches were touchdowns. He was highly targeted in the red zone. And then you look at his production the rest of the season, not targeted a lot. I mean, only 52 times in his career, 33 catches. So, I mean, essentially, this is a potential pick. If you're an NFL team, I would assume you're picking him based on purely potential, not necessarily based on his collegiate resume because there's not much substance there.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, but you watch the production that he did have, and you watch him versus some of the bigger teams that Ohio State played, and you look at how he was able to get open, how he was able to use his body, and how he is tracking the ball in the air. And you look at the upside that he has, you know, I'd definitely be, if I'm a team and I got a third, fourth round pick, I'd definitely use one of those on a guy like Noah Brown. And you look at the risk versus reward and the upside being so much higher than the lower.
What do you think, Beanie, is the biggest challenge for all these guys trying to make that jump from college to the pros? And I think even more so now than really in the last 10, 15 years or so, you know, the spread offense and, you know, and the way Urban Meyer plays, the game's really different for both offensive and defensive players, offensive linemen especially. You know, some guys aren't even in three-point stances in college anymore. Is it that physical part of it? Is it the mental part? Is it the game plan? What's the toughest thing that a collegiate player has to adjust to in the NFL to be successful on the next level?
I think it's the mental aspect. I mean, and not just in terms of, you know, learning the playbook, but learning how to be a professional. You know, the game has changed so much, as you said. And, you know, offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators, they've gotten so much smarter than just even 10 years ago. And they found new innovative ways to be able to, you know, scheme up game plans to try to get that advantage on other teams. And for a younger guy coming in to where, like for me, for instance, going in from a basic system at Ohio State and going into a situation in Arizona where I had Kurt Warner as my quarterback and I had 30 different checks that I had to look out for and be able to read through, it was difficult for me. And for these young guys, you know, taking the time to be a pro, knowing that, you know what, there is no school anymore. Your job is to be a professional athlete, so you have to do your due diligence, do your homework, take care of your body, pay attention to your studies, and studies being the playbook. I mean, that's one of the bigger things, the physicality of the game. I think football is football wherever you go. And people talk about the speed of the game. It isn't as much as the physical speed as it is the mental speed. I mean, you got to be able to go through a playbook. The quarterback recites the play. You have to go out and execute that play without thinking twice. My coach would always tell me, heavy head, heavy feet. If you're thinking about what you're doing, you're not going to be out there and be able to utilize your talent and be out there full speed without thinking. And I think that's the point for younger guys to really hone in on, is to be able to, you know, stay in tune to what's going on and to be able to recite that playbook and learn like the back of your hand. And that way, everything that you do when you go out there is such at a natural rate that you're able to utilize everything that you have in your arsenal and be able to help your team.
You know, Beanie, one guy that seems like he should be able to do that is Pat Elflein, the very talented center, played guard at Ohio State as well. In the pros, do you see him as a guard or center? Can he do both? And is he one of those classic offensive linemen that'll help, you know, the five-man unit become a one-man group where they play as a group, they're making checks, and that really makes everybody around them better?
Oh, absolutely. I think Pat Elflein is a guy that can do both. You know, right now he's training with Charles Bentley, who was a notorious dirty man on the offensive line. When I say dirty, I mean just a downright beast on the offensive line. So he already has that mentality. He's around the right people. And when you watch him play here at Ohio State, I mean, he's a guy that always gives that extra goes that extra mile. And that's what you want out of an offensive lineman. You want to see a guy driving 5, 6, 7 yards down the field. And as a running back, you appreciate that. As a quarterback, you absolutely appreciate a guy that's going to go the extra mile. And Pat Elflein is no different. And the one consistent I keep going back to with Urban Meyer guys is that they're smart. They're going to know what checks to make on the offensive line. They're going to know the offense. They're going to know the defense. And Pat Elflein is no different. A very, very smart individual, comes from a great family. And I can't wait to watch him succeed at the next level.
Talking with former NFL running back Beanie Wells, co-host of Tim and Beanie on 97.1 The Fan in Ohio. Beanie, last one for me. I'm looking through the archives and your statistics, and I don't know if you're aware, but coincidentally, your first career NFL touchdown came against the New York Giants in 2009. It was a 24-17 victory for you and your teammates, and you alluded to the fact that, you know, when Kurt Warner was under center, you had to learn all the checks. Did you remember anything from this contest that you were able to put yourself on center stage against the Giants at the Meadowlands and finally find the end zone?
Yeah. Anthony Beck was the tight end in that game, and AB kept saying to me, Anthony played for the Jets as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And he kept telling me that you can't go through your whole rookie season without scoring a touchdown. And so I remember getting in, and that was the midpoint of the season, I remember getting the ball and getting in the end zone, and AB yelling, "You finally did it, you finally did it." Well, that was a crazy game. That was kind of almost like one of my defining games my rookie year as far as coming out and having a pretty good one. And I know it was only for maybe 60-some-odd yards, but it was a big game first that year. And one of the years we ended up going on to the playoffs. But to be able to score, and I think you guys had did a tribute. I think Lawrence Taylor was there on the field that game, if I'm not mistaken.
Nice.
And there was a bunch of older Giants on the field doing the tribute that game. So I remember it being a night, and it was an exciting moment for sure for me.
And you were also teammates in that game with Onshore Roll, who came on to win the Super Bowl with the Giants, and Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, who, by the way, is, I still think, the fastest guy in the league. That dude can run.
Oh, no question about it. No question about it. DRC is he's one of the most hilarious guys to ever be around.
Oh, he's the best. He's the best.
I'm sure you guys have noticed that a ton there. And Antrel Rowe was a tremendous leader, too, and a great teammate. But DRC, man, a guy that can flat-out fly. I mean, I don't know many like him. And I would always be jealous of guys like that that would never have to really try that hard and is just that talented. He's absolutely one of them.
Yeah, Beanie, it's funny, you know, just watching him on the practice field, he takes these little baby steps, he kind of jogs around, and then at a split second notice, he goes from 0 miles an hour to about 75 in a straight line. You're like, wow, how'd that guy do that?
Switches the gauge.
Exactly. So fast.
Beanie, great stuff, man. We appreciate the time today. Awesome stuff. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you down the road, all right?
Thanks a lot, Beanie.
No problem. Yeah, have a good one.
Great stuff. And right. Beanie also made the day of our producer, Dan Solomon, Ohio State grad. He's had a smile beard to ear on his face during that entire interview.
Yes, anytime we could spend half of the program on Buckeyes prospects, he's going to be all smiles. He's not going to complain. One quick side note here. I'm reading through the recap of that game that I alluded to. Jeff Fiegels apparently struggled immensely. I love how the recap goes.
I saw that.
I wanted to bring this up, but I don't even know if PD remembers Jeff. Jeff Fiegels struggled, helping give the Cardinals a solid edge in field position for much of the primetime matchup. That's my favorite line in the recap from this game.
I'm going to bring that up with Fiegels on Friday.
Bring this up. You have to.
That's tremendous.
It's phenomenal.
That is tremendous.
And you know what? I'm glad you brought up. It's amazing how this one game, the connections to the Giant.
I know.
Old DRC. He also played, by the way, with Anquan Boldin and Larry Fitzgerald.
Oh, and Kurt Warner, too, who's on the team with the former Giant.
Yeah, this is like the who's who of Giants football.
I know. And
crazy.
And also Giants media. Hunter Ohl maybe by doing some more stuff with us next year. We'll see. I think he stepped into a couple of post-game shows last year, Entrell, right?
On the TV
side,
yes,
on the TV
side,
yeah, absolutely. Yep. So, so always fun.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to make sure I got Elflein in there because the two quotes that they have from an anonymous NFC West scout, I think he could have the same fast impact on a team's running game that Zach Martin had in Dallas.
I saw that line, yeah.
And the comparison they had also was Travis Frederick, another Cowboy. So he could be a second, mid-early second-round pick to me. As a guard center guy that can really help an offensive line.
Well, what stands out to me also is he has experience at left guard, right guard, and center. They moved him around a little bit.
I didn't realize it was left and right guard.
Yeah, they moved him around a bit, so I think that makes him versatile, and that's probably going to jump out to teams. And also, and Beanie alluded to this, his biggest impact may come in also the locker room because he's very mature for his age, and you want a guy like that.
He seems like a glue guy. You know,
yeah,
they have those
exactly.
glue guys on the offensive line that make everybody better, and you know, you make the five guys play as one unit. You're right. He seems to have all those types of offensive line leader intangibles you want.
And I'm not surprised that they think he's going to have an impact on the running game because he actually has a wrestling background.
He does, yes.
So you figured that that would translate. All right, let's try to squeeze in a few phone calls before we wrap things up.
Real quick, by the way, real fast. Curtis Samuel, to me, the way he described him and talked about him reminds me, now that I had the name a second ago, it just went out of my head, the dynamic returner receiver slash running back for the Chiefs that came on big end of last year.
Oh,
help me out.
Yeah, I know who you're talking
about. You know exactly what I mean.
Now I'm going
Salomon,
too.
You got
no,
me on that.
I'm
going to
look up the roster
you know
if I see
talking
the name.
About.
Yeah.
Oh, he's killing me. I
I'll find it here in a second.
I had it when Beanie brought
he's
it up, and I was going to say
Tyreek Hill.
Thank
that's
you, Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill.
And I think that's a good comparison. And I think the Chiefs kind of figured out how to use him, and I think if a team – I thought Percy Harvin was a good comparison, too, to be honest with you.
Well, I think that a player like that certainly has a role in the NFL.
Dude, a 4-3-1.
Well, and it's not just so much speed. It's the fact that, okay, if you bring him in, he can run, he can catch, and he can return kickoff. So you can find areas – to try to maximize his value. And Hill was that wild card, jack of all trades type of player.
Now, he had the off the field stuff that Curtis Samuel doesn't, but I think it works. You got two calls lines. Let's get to them.
All right, let's head back to the lines. We got Adam in New Jersey. Adam, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, John. Hey, Lance. How you guys doing today?
Doing well, Adam. How are you, pal?
I'm great, great. I actually interned with you guys on this show. Is Big Blue Hips.
Adam. I won't say your last name on the air, but Adam, I know exactly who you are. Good to hear from you. How are you?
Good, good, good. I've been wanting to call in because of Eric Flowers. People keep getting on this guy because of his inconsistencies. What I wanted to say was the reason the Giants signed Rhett Ellison was to help in Eric Flowers. Because if you look at last year's personnel, they ran 11 personnel 90% of the time, which means you're only five linemen. Right? So you didn't really have a back to chip. If you watch inside the fill room, courtesy of you guys, there's a plug right there. You got your two best runs for Paul Perkins on Eric Flowers' side. Okay? Go back to the Eagle game, his big run against that side. Who caved in the left side? That was Eric Flowers. In the game against the Redskins, who caved in the left side? Again, that was Eric Flowers.
You know, Adam, I think the question, though, Adam, and I think we all know Flowers can do it in the run game. The question is, will they adjust the offense, because I don't think we saw it much last year, where you have the running back or tight end, Ellison, whoever it might be over there, either stay in the block or chip more than they did last year, because we didn't see that a ton last season with him getting that chip help or the extra guy on his side in passing situations.
I think they will, because if you can move Rhett Ellison around, you can have him chip and do a little, you know, fullback flat out pass, you know, and help out Eric Flowers. He should do it for both sides, depending on who the tackles are at this point. But the reason if you watch Red Ellison's film, you see that he has that ability when he did that against Von Miller, helping his tackle out. So I think if you can give Eric Flowers a little, I'm not saying every time. Obviously, if you do it every time, people are going to catch on to what you're doing. But, you know, if you see that there might be a little leakage, say, hey, you know what, Red? Let's motion you in, give a little chip block, go out and do your 10-yard route, 5-yard route. Now, the next guy I wanted to really touch on real quick is Paul Perkins. Paul Perkins, no one's giving this guy credit. He's going to make the offensive line better because if you watch, right, on those inside the film rooms, the guys are crashing up the middle, and the play is designed to go to the middle. But because Eric Flowers and Justin Tue have caved in the left side, he has the ability to bounce it to the outside and make those moves. And I think – people forget about Tiki Barber. Remember when Tiki Barber came in, they said he's a third down back, he's not strong enough, he won't be able to handle the load. Well, guess what? He got a fire lit under his belly, and he became the all-time leading rusher with the Giants. Now, I'm not saying Paul Perkins is going to do that. What I'm saying is with his ability, you can do so much more things with him, and he can compromise for your lack of a great offensive line. Because remember when Tiki was in 2000, that offensive line was starting to gel. Because he was who he was, even the offensive linemen, Glenn Parker and Dusty Ziegler, said, we don't have to block like we do for Dane. When Ron Dane was running, we had to open up holes. When Tiki Barber's running, we just have to make creases.
Because of the style of his running game. Yeah, he's a shiftier guy, so he can make up for maybe some plays that break down. You know, the other thing to monitor with Paul Perkins, I think he made strides in this category, and it hasn't been brought up. is the fact that he improved in pass protection.
He got really good at the end of the
year. That is something, Adam, to also note. And there's one play that stands out to me. Against Cleveland, Jamie Collins is coming up the gut, and Paul Perkins is the one who steps in and prevents Jamie Collins from getting to Eli Manning. So, you know, those are the things you want to see him continue to improve in as well.
Adam, we got to run, man. I got one more call I want to get in, all right?
All right, terrific.
Hey, thanks for the call, man. Good stuff. And I agree. You know me. I'm the captain of the Paul Perkins fan club on Biblical Kickoff. So, I agree with everything he said.
Well, a lot of people were calling for, you know, another running back to come in the mix, but I think Paul Perkins is more than capable from carrying the load this coming season.
I'm telling you, Lance, everybody that I talked to out at the Combine after we talked about this year's draft, everyone would always say, loved Paul Perkins last year, and we think that he can be a starter. So,
certainly flashed at the end of last season. You'd like to continue that. Ray is in Alexandria. Ray, what's happening?
Not so much, guys. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Ray. What's up?
Okay, so I listened in all last summer. I was in a different state and just heard Charlie calling in and arguing with you guys day after day after day. It was Rage Against the Machine. It was entertaining.
And nothing has changed.
It was entertaining, to say the least. But, I mean, one thing I want to say about Flowers is that I'm somewhat pleased by his development. He made some strides last year, but I think the issue is that we were much better than a lot of people anticipated. So, like, there's a tendency to become impatient with, you know, the process now that we're borderline contenders, you know? We went from being mired in mediocrity for, you know, three seasons in a row to all of a sudden now people are talking Super Bowl, which is great. But at the same time, I believe that he handled the bull rush really well when I saw it. He even handled inside rush pretty well. He was a mauler in the run game, as we know. And I think that having more balance in our offense and, you know, having more run calls and things of that nature, having a tight end that's helpful in blocking and stuff like that will really benefit him. And also, he played a lot better with Pugh next to him, and Pugh was hurt, you know, for a few games. I saw that he struggled a bit with the outside speed rush and whatever it may be. But at the same time, like, you know, there are signs that he's getting better. It's just that, you know, all of a sudden we're in win now mode and a lot of people are just trying to throw out this investment. But I do agree that we should have more talent. Well, not talent. I would say more so competition for him. You know, we have tons of competition at the guard spot. And I think that it would be beneficial if he had more competition. I think that's coming, too, when we get the veteran signing later on. But, you know, I just want to bring up the fact that I'm not ready to give up on him yet. Yes, I get frustrated with him. But the reality is that, you know, he still has plenty of time to, you know, to live up to that draft status. And I think that he's going to be even better this year.
Fair point, Ray.
All right, Ray. Appreciate the call.
And look, the Giants are going to count on him. I think they would have liked to see more development from year one to year two. And I think after year one, Lance, we sat there and we're like, you know what? The guy played with a high ankle sprain the whole year. He fought through the injury and we thought, you know what? It makes sense. He's having some issues with speed rushers, moving his feet. Maybe it's the ankle. Then the ankle got healthy. You know, everyone's banged up. I'm not saying he was healthy last year, because no one's healthy by the end of the year. But he didn't have any serious injuries.
The lingering
the
injury,
year.
At least.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That he was kind of in and out of the lineup. He actually missed a game at the end of his rookie year with that high ankle, too. And I think what you would have thought you would have seen a little bit more improvement from the pass protection standpoint. And I don't think you saw what you would have liked enough of it, especially with, you know, the hand technique and all that stuff. And you hope that with another offseason, you can figure that out.
Yeah, and that's why I keep going back to how important this offseason is, how important the third year is. You know, nobody's trying to overlook some of the things that came to the forefront. I mean, the penalties is something that he obviously is looking to clean up when you look at the numbers from last season. And that's part of technique. That's part of the finesse of the game. So, I mean, it's really show me time for him. I think most people would agree. But, you know, the big turnaround that the caller was alluding to and why people are maybe putting them in the conversation of Super Bowl or playoff bound is the defense, how much the defense improved from 15 to 16. And then I think people saw the defense and they're like, well, wait a minute, the offense was up here in 15, scoring at a high rate. Why did that dip? So now that's why I think the offense has been put under the magnifying glass, because the defense cleaned up in the span of 16 games.
Absolutely. Folks, thank you for joining us on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. Tomorrow, myself and Paul Dottino will be with you, and we'll be talking to Mark Tauscher, former offensive lineman for the Packers and the Wisconsin Badgers, breaking down the Wisconsin prospects, including Ryan Ramczyk. I'm sure Paul Dottino will be very excited.
Oh, you can guarantee that.
To have that conversation. So thank you for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com, everybody. Have a pleasant afternoon.
Have a good one.